back together again, you and I, chatting it up on Tuesday, February 13th, 2024, on Connecticut Today. I opened the show with some thoughts I had on a recent church shooting in Texas and the media coverage that went with it. Commuter advocate Jim Cameron dropped by with an interesting thought and observation on school transportation, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio joined us for her weekly update.
As we maybe have seen the finality of the flakes here, before we get into it, just to give you a quick update here before we get around to our discussion for the day. The power situation is very, very, very good, almost non-existent as far as outages. About 70 UI customers in and about the UI service area, New Haven to Bridgeport and Milford, all that are out of power right now. And as I look at the Eversource outage center here, only about 1,700 people among Eversource's 1 million plus customers are without power. Now, again, if you're one of those 1,700, it is not anything wonderful. But again, just to let you know that there are no mass power outages from this storm that was quick. It was heavy, wet snow out there, but we're starting to see the skies clear. And as Paul Piorek said, should be fine and dandy by later tonight, overnight into tomorrow. I have always said that when I hear or see news about a tragic shooting here, whether it's a mass shooting or a shooter gone off the rails, as a teacher of mine used to say years ago, oh, you're off the rails, or he or she is off the rails, I always wait and I say, well, let's see how long this is going to take. And let's see what the media coverage of this will be. I woke up this morning and I opened up my, you know, news browsers on my three computers and my phone. And sure enough, we are starting to see that again with this Texas shooting that happened at the Joel Osteen Lakewood Church in Houston few days ago. And you can already see how this is dropping off the radar or the high-level stories of many of the news organizations who, frankly, would be turning cartwheels if this was an overweight, white, balding guy wearing a flannel shirt and a Trump MAGA hat. It would be like manna from heaven. Oh, and if that guy or that woman, you never know, were an NRA member. But again, as usually happens with these things, it is not the law-abiding gun owner who simply likes to have his guns or her guns as a show of their idea of freedom, much the way the left likes to tout abortion as being their ultimate statement about freedom, which they can. That's fine. Whatever. It's usually not that kind of a person. It's a person who enjoys guns for the collector's aspect of it, for self-defense, to hunt or whatever, or to say, you know, to basically tell the government you're not going to regulate this. And it's usually, and I'm sure it's happened somewhere along the line, there's so many of these shootings now, you can't keep track, but it's usually not an abiding gun owner or an NRA member, although the people in the media, sadly in my business, would have you think, well, everybody who likes guns is a gun nut automatically or is an NRA member. But it's not the case here. And allow me to give you a couple of paragraphs of this story, because I guarantee you will hear stuff about this story that you haven't heard. And interestingly enough, this is from NBC News, which is hardly a right-wing news outlet. But again, I give them credit for at least going deep on this to prove a point. And the point that I make all the time is that these sorts of things rarely happen in a vacuum. How long have you heard me say that? Over and over and over again. Yes, there are some unsolved shootings. The shooting at that big country music festival in Las Vegas 8, 9, or 10 years ago.
The I-91 Festival, I think they called it, or the I-95 Festival in Vegas, whatever, an open-air shooting where people were running and scrambling, and some nut was up in a hotel 10 or 15 stories high, a few hundred feet away, and shooting. I don't think they've ever put one to that. But over and over again, whether it's the Uvalde shooting, whether it's Newtown, whether it's the Florida shooting with Nicholas Cruz, over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, we see scenarios where people said something. You know how we run those PSAs here on the radio station, and you hear them on other stations and online and on TV stations? If you see something, say something. Well, apparently, with a lot of these shooting cases, if people see something and say something, the people who get said something are too dumb, too idiotic, or too incompetent to do anything about it. NBC News Dateline Conroe, Texas. Years before a shooter opened fire at Joel Osteen's Lakewood Church in Houston, residents in the small neighborhood say they had run-ins with the suspect who frightened them. Six women who live in the neighborhood in Conroe, a North Houston suburb, said that the woman, Genesee Iovan Moreno, and we should stop here. This is actually, there's conflicting reports here, whether it's a woman transitioning to a man or a man transitioning to a woman, which should also bring up, and it never does, the effect that any hormones have in these cases. We'll get to that in a moment. Six women who live in the neighborhood of Conroe, that's outside of Houston, said the woman in question, Genesee Iovan Moreno, targeted them, harassed them, threatened them, displayed firearms, and made them fear being outside of their homes. Late Monday afternoon, the women got together. Good for them. They held a news conference in the driveway of a home to describe what they said they'd been enduring and to criticize what they said was an official's failure to respond to their reports. Quote, "No one should have died. No one should have been hurt. This should have been handled years ago, and here we are again," said Jill, the president of the neighborhood association, who would not give her last name out of fear of retaliation. That should tell you something. She's afraid to give her last name. Authorities said Moreno opened fire Sunday afternoon between services in the Lakewood megachurch in Houston. Her seven-year-old son was with her at the time, authorities said. So I believe this was a woman transitioning to become a man. Was testosterone involved here? I'm just asking. Just asking. Houston Police Chief Troy Finner said Monday the young boy was wounded fighting for his life. A 57-year-old man who was also hit had been released from the hospital. No one answered at the address where authorities said Moreno lived, nor did anyone respond to a business card left at the door. In the neighborhood, lawns are orderly with a few plants and planters on them, except for the one at Moreno's home. It has a small concrete statue or two of a rabbit, a fairy, and an angel. The women who spoke said things got so bad in the neighborhood, get this, folks, that five of them spent a day about 5 months ago talking to local elected officials, police, the sheriff's office, and even the city's legal department as well. They wrote letters to the neighborhood's property management company, met with its lawyer, called the media, said Linda Giuta. She gave her name. She lives in the neighborhood. They said a cease and desist order was issued after the meeting. We cannot do anything more than we did. We tried to stop this, she said. We tried to help her. We tried to help us. We tried to help the public. Something needs to get done. Thank you. One of the women, Heather, again, who would only give her last name because she's afraid, alleged Moreno threatened her with a handgun on July 4th of 2022, almost 2 years ago. Heather said Moreno had screamed expletives at her when she was watering her lawn that morning. Heather said she walked to Moreno's home and that the woman pointed a handgun at her from behind the truck of her car. Police documented the incident as a threat. She said, quote, this Heather, who wouldn't give her last name, quote, "We are being told, see something, say something. Well, we're seeing stuff, we're saying stuff, and Conroy PD, Conroe PD, is not helping us. I don't want to bash them, but help us, please. Neither the police department nor Conroe's five town council members gave any comment. Authorities have not identified a motive in Sunday's shooting, but they say a dispute between Moreno and her ex-husband's family, some of whom are Jewish, may be linked to the shooting. Oh, and by the way, two law enforcement officials told NBC News that Moreno used an assault rifle with the word Palestine written on it. You want to know why this, by tomorrow or the next day, this story, folks, will be gone? A transgender person, and the firearm had the word Palestine on it. Yeah. Hey, make sure we put this in the back of the folder. It is mind-numbing. And all the time we hear, if you see something, say something. You know, I have a friend of mine, and I've told you this before. I have a friend of mine in the, yes, I do have friends, shocking as it is. I have a friend of mine in the news business, and we were discussing one of these shootings once, maybe 6 months, 8 months, or a year ago. And we were texting back and forth as I was doing something, and she was doing something else. But we were commenting on the story. And she said to me, she said, you notice how we, meaning the business, there's never pressure. And I kind of understand why, because of HIPAA laws. And I've discussed this with experts on the show here. But we never know what kind of medications these people are. Now, this is, I guess, a biological woman who was transitioning to a man. Okay, that may have nothing to do with it. That may have something to do with it. That may have everything to do with it. Was testosterone involved? I'm sorry, I think that's a viable question. Were there any other psychiatric medicines involved? Listen, any of you who've ever been on a psychiatric med and some mental health issues run in my mother's side of the family, it's not severe, but they're there. You know, look at and read and listen to, because you hear them on TV and on radio, all these side effects of some medications. And now you add into this that this is the second or third mass shooter we've had. Well, not a mass shooter, but unprovoked shooting where there have been transgender issues. Are there hormones involved? So this story, trust me, by the end of the week, you won't hear boo about it. Boo. But what we do hear, and it's sad, is that over and over and over and over and over again, the shooting happens, you wait a few hours, then like midday in the next day, you get there's new information or more information on the shooter. It's amazing that within a day, you say, well, who is this? Well, they know. Police know. Medical professionals know. Psychiatric professionals know. But remember, we're supposed to say something if we see something. And for that, I say thank you so much. We appreciate that, all of us here at Connoisseur Media with all of our great stations. We'll get back to open phones a bit later on to the hour, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. We haven't had this gentleman on in a while, and his latest column kind of piqued my interest. Why so few Connecticut kids are on school buses? I'm looking at it here in the Connecticut Mirror. He's in other spots online, too, and in print. Jim Cameron joins us. Mr. Cameron, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Dr. Pacelli, long time no see. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, my friend. By the way, before we get to this, I was thinking of you the other day because as I was listening to editing and re-airing the governor's, I think it was he mentioned it in the state address, his he will not be deterred, Jim, from shaving off 15 minutes. I'm sorry, I thought of you. I said, here it is. This is going to send millions of people into Connecticut that we can get to Grand Central 15 minutes quicker. But, you know, whatever, I guess, right?
Well, you know, let's just say that he lives the dream, or he dreams the dream. I mean, he's still talking about trying to cut train time off of the run from New Haven to Grand Central. And the best they can do that in, I think it's 99 minutes. That's like an hour and a half, right?
Yeah.
And he wants to do it in 1 hour. I don't know how, you know, rocket-propelled trains or something. But in his State of the State, address to the legislature, He's now even more ambitious. We're going to carve 20 minutes off of the time. He said Bridgeport is going to be as close to New York City as Stamford is, or some such thing. And everybody applauds, and everyone goes, yeah, that'll be great. And then it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And you wonder why people are cynical about what politicians say.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to something, though, that I found entertaining in your column here. And you know, Jim, I often ask this question on my show. What don't you see kids doing anymore? For example, you and I grew up with the packs of bicycle riders and the street hockey games or the tennis ball baseball games or touch football in the street when we used to have to tap our horns to get the kids to get out of the way. None of that right now. And you point out something in your column, why so few Connecticut kids are on the school bus. I was shocked at the percentage you put here.
Well, it's not just Connecticut kids. This is a national trend. Actually, I was inspired by reading some data from the National Household Travel Survey, which is put together by the Federal Highway Administration. You know, really, I got to get a life and stop reading all this stuff sometime, Paul. But this is all about the different ways that kids get to school. And if you look at the charts, going back to about 1969, that was long before you were ever going to school, right? But in those days, in the good old days, as we'd say, school buses carried about 38% of the kids to school.
Okay.
42% of them walked on their feet or they took a bike. So more kids biked than took the school bus. And private cars, that was like about 18%.
Wow.
Well, today, private cars represent 53% of all the transportation provided to kids going to school. The school bus is about 35%. So it's fallen, just a little bit. But it's the private vehicle that's made up the difference. And bike or foot pedestrians, that's about 12%. So we wonder why kids are getting fat. You know, it's because they're putting their backsides into a private, SUV so mom can drive them to school in what I call the SUV parade, or they're still taking the school bus. But what's really interesting is why aren't more kids taking the school bus? You know, all the towns in Fairfield County and beyond are going through budget time right now, and all the school budgets are really getting crunched. And I would not be surprised if some school system said, why are we spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on school buses that the kids are not taking? It's easier to cut school busing than it is to cut teachers.
Yeah, and if you're not cutting it, Jim, maybe you redirect some of that money, saying, okay, a couple of these routes are going to be, realigned or whatever. We're going to take some savings and put it toward teachers or paraprofessionals. And you also pointed out something, Jim, in your piece, where people may say, well, what about kids who maybe take the city bus? And I had some high school friends of mine that did that. In fact, I used to do that, getting out of Notre Dame in West Haven to go to my dad's store. And you brought up a startling stat looking at that scenario in Hartford.
Well, public transit in that list of the means of transportation of getting kids to school that I mentioned never really scored more than about 4 or 5%. I think maybe it's down to 3 or 4% now. Now, in Hartford, there were some activists, let's just call them, community organizers and activists, that said that the lack of transportation on public transportation, like, you know, city buses, to get kids to school does not make up for the bad school bus system that they have in Hartford. And they said, why not give kids, free passes on the bus?
Yeah.
Why don't we encourage kids to take the bus? They do that in New York City. You know, you will not, well, it's not impossible to find them, but you will not find many school buses driving around in New York City. The kids have access to great mass transits, buses and subways, and they get a free pass. So if we did that with the bus systems in robust towns like Bridgeport and Hartford, maybe the kids would take the school bus and I'm sorry, take the city bus if they don't take the school bus already. But the idea is, do we need mom or dad to be playing chauffeur every day? to take these precious kids to class. One of the reasons that sometimes that happens is in some towns we don't have sidewalks. Where I live in Darien, we don't have sidewalks going to most of the schools, and I don't want my kids walking along on streets next to speeding motorists. Or maybe the kid has to get there early for French enrichment class, or she doesn't want to take the tuba with her on the school bus. Or maybe there's bullying on the school bus. We don't have school bus monitors anymore. So there are some explanations for all this.
Yeah, interesting notes there. And, Jim, before we let you go, one of your previous columns I know you wrote about, and I was laughing because you categorized it as only you can. There was a transportation forum, I believe, a couple of weeks back in Fairfield County that, again, was really nice when they announced it, but what got done there, if anything?
Well, it was quite the gathering. We had the governor. We had the president of Amtrak. We had one of the officers from the Federal Railroad Administration. We had the mayor, the ever-smiling mayor of Stamford, Miss Simmons. And we had the commissioner of the DOT. Wow. I mean, you put all those people together in one room, you can really make something happen if they're not just sitting there kind of patting themselves on the back about all the federal money that's going to be coming our way. And this was a strange transportation summit. Oh, by the way, I was not invited. I wonder why. I was not invited, nor did they take any questions from the audience. So it was like, as I said, it was a PR event. And the media that was there covered it and left with their heads scratching going, was there any news in this? Did they announce anything new? No, they didn't.
Did they take any questions?
Hold an event?
Jim, did they take any questions
from
the
moderator? Only from the moderator. And the moderator came from the New England Corridor Commission, so he wasn't about ready to bite any of these hands that feed his coffers either. So there were no tough questions. There were no questions like, you keep talking about, faster and more frequent trains. What about Shoreline East? When are you going to restore service on Shoreline East? Ridership is not going to come back if you don't put trains back on. There were just so many contradictions. It was like the governor going, oh, yeah, we're going to be able to, get from Bridgeport to downtown Manhattan in about 15 minutes, and nobody challenging him. Nobody saying, excuse me, on what are you basing these assumptions?
And still, Jim, no Wi-Fi on the trains. Every time you bring that up, I don't know what are the – Jim, I said to myself, do I laugh or I cry? There's no Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and the legislature gave Metro North, what is it, $23 million to put Wi-Fi on the trains? I was on the train last week. No Wi-Fi.
Man. Folks, check it out. He's in the Connecticut Mirror and other spots as well. Talking transportation, our buddy Jim Cameron. This week's edition, Why So Few Kids Are on the School Bus. Jim, thank you. Be good, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Paul. Be well.
Appreciate it. Jim Cameron there. Why so few kids on the school bus? About that, huh? All righty, fourth and final hour, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, back to open phones momentarily. And I promise, coming up before the end of the show, I've checked around, and apparently what I'm going to tell you is actually real. It exists. I thought it may be a deep fake, but we'll get to that momentarily. It's one of the most cringeworthy things I've ever seen. But first, we will stay focused here. We'll stay within the guardrails. You like what I did there? Yes, yes. Megan Portfolio, Yankee Institute, writes the Hartford Portfolio blog. We welcome her at this time every Tuesday. Megan, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm all right. The sun is actually cascading into my home studio now, so I guess we'll all survive the snow, I guess.
We're going to survive, I promise.
The dogs were good? You got the dogs under control with the storm and everything today?
I'm not kidding you. They're like, every first snowfall with Connecticut drivers, they're like, oh my God, it's snowing, what do I do? That was my dogs today. It's just a dog walk. We do this 10 times a day.
So I
cleared out a nice patch in the grass. And they didn't want to use that. They wanted the tramps right through the snow.
Well, because isn't that kind of what we let them do? I mean, and they probably were happy, right? Were they happy?
Oh, they were happy.
See,
that's all that matters. pups were happy.
That's right. Hey, before we get to the latest piece you wrote about the folks who want to drive up costs for businesses, I had a laugh when you texted me the other day, and I guess your reference to the omnibus, love that word, the omnibus environmental bill in Hartford caught the eye of some people, and ooh, some people got triggered. What happened?
Yeah, you know, so what I do every morning is I read the news, you know, that's what we do in this business. And this popped up in my feed, this op-ed in the CT Mirror with talking about the Green Monster. What was the title? It was, "We Believe in Connecticut's Green Monster." I'm like, oh, wow, this is awesome. This is going to be like a nice debate. They're going to come back and counter my point, give me some more information on the bill. Oh, no. They wrote this op-ed. It's a handful of representatives basically trying to be funny, making baseball references, doing name-calling, like making fun of Yankee Institute, but nowhere in there. I mean, they spent no time in actually talking about like what they're trying to do. They're just – it was ridiculous. They're literally just sitting there name-calling. If you read my piece, I'm not saying I'm the greatest writer on the face of the earth, but I mean, I linked to my sources. I was very thoughtful with it. I took all their bullet points and gave a counter argument to it, talking about how, you know, certain recommendations like going all electric with new building, what that can do to housing prices. No, they took actual time out of their day to just like make fun of me in this op-ed instead of addressing any of my concerns.
Yeah, and they referenced all you fine folks at the Yankee Institute. What they say, you were the fossil fuel loving Yankee Institute or something.
That made me laugh. I don't even know where they get this from. You can't just make things up and put it in an op-ed. Like, fine, if you want to say that, at least like a link to it. But it is. And then they're all proud of him. I'm calling it a monster because it's scary. Monsters are scary, and they're all proud of it.
Yeah, but, you know. Hey, how would they?
All I can say is we're keeping our eyes out on it, and the second that thing pops, I mean, they even have a bill number, so they couldn't do us a solid and at least, like, tell us what's in the bill. Like, if you're going to propose this ginormous piece of legislation, you know, what are you going to give us, like a day to read it, which is typical? You know how they are.
Yeah, and I say all the time on the show here, Megan, okay, you don't want coal, all right? You don't want nuclear, all right? You don't want oil, all right? Now they don't want natural gas. What are you for? Just tell me something that realistically we can adopt, you know, before we land on Mars eventually, and what works? And you never get the, you know, beyond solar and wind, which are nice, but, you know, they can't carry nearly the weight right now. So, again, what I ask all the time, and you probably do too, what are they for? That's all I want to know. What are they for?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they want us to walk to work. But all I know is the only thing they had in their whole piece was they said green jobs create jobs. Okay, like, what jobs are you talking about? Where is your data on that? I mean, put some more thought into it. I mean, I'm totally fine with debate. And if I'm incorrect about something, or if someone has a different opinion and they see it a certain way, that's great. That's how this whole system works. But I mean, like, just to sit there and make lame jokes. I mean, you're talking about making policies that are going to really affect people's life. They're going to affect the way, you know, what we can afford, how much food we can put on the table. But they took their time not to address any of our concerns or my concerns, just to make lame jokes. Anyway,
speaking of what may happen this legislative session, which should be a relatively quiet session, you would think, in an election year, you're keeping an eye, Megan, on the Labor and Public Employees Committee, which has been quite boisterous, I guess, so far about their intentions. So what's going on with that?
Yeah, we're not even like a full week in the session, and I'm already like Travis Kelce yelling at my coach, but it's just like me yelling at my computer.
Wait, you're going full Travis Kelce, your poor computer, man. Okay.
Oh, I know. Poor Taylor. Leave Taylor alone. I'm just kidding. But back to the Labor Committee. Yeah, so they wasted no time to sit and just reinvent the wheel of garbage bills last year with maybe they have good intentions. I'm not entirely sure, but these are just things that are not good for small business. It's like the big guys can absorb, you know, some of this crap. but it's like the medium and small businesses, which make up most of the business in the state. Like, how much more punishment are you going to give these poor people? The one of them, and actually, I was a little disappointed in that because, you know, Governor Lamont is, you know, out the gate, he's been okay. He's been, you know, talking about guardrails and whatnot, yeah. and I'm happy yeah. sticking to it. But now they want to impose paid sick day. All employers in the state, if this goes through, will have to provide 40 hours of sick time a year. Right now, that's only the case for companies with 50 or more employees.
Sure.
But my dad, who owns a small coffee shop, he's got just a handful of employees. It's one location. You know, my parents work. They're in their 70s. They work 7 days a week, six days a week. So I sent it to my dad, and he said, "What are they trying to do? Put me out of business?"
And
he
how
says,
does
like,
your,
I can't take it anymore.
How do your parents? So in other words, okay, if they had to guarantee, and this is great that you're bringing this up in an example that hits close to you, Megan. So if he has to, by law, if he's forced in a few years to give all of his workers at your family coffee shop paid sick leave, like how does he fill that time? Does he have to just him and his mom and who's ever there, him and your mom, rather, and who's ever
yeah.
there have to pick it up? Or do they have to, does he going to have to bring more people in? How does he do that?
I mean, you can't just keep bringing more people. Well, first of all, it's very hard for businesses like that, restaurants and retail, just to retain employees. It's really tough right now for these small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not so much the sick time because he already provides, he provides vacation,
sure.
he provides, you know, bonuses and whatnot, mm-hmm. which most small businesses do because these employees are family members and that's how they're treated and that's how they're looked at. They're not just looked at like, oh, you're employee number one. No, these are family. So he already provides that. But here comes the big problem. In order to do this, the Department of Labor is going to require all these businesses to keep, like, all of these records for 3 years, showing all the hours accrued for all the employees, how mm-hmm. it was used. The employees don't need to provide it. Like, they can just call in sick. I mean, I'm sure when you were in high school, had a job, and it kind of sucked when someone called in sick, and you knew they were at the beach, mm-hmm. and you couldn't go to the beach because you had to work. So you don't even have to provide a doctor's note. But if they don't keep these records, they're going to get fined. And the DOL can just, anytime they wish, can go pull records. So it's like you're just adding more mandates, more stress to these poor businesses that are already trying to struggle, you know, just to make it back to where they were before, you know, the government shutdowns.
You know, I was reading, Megan, I don't know whether it was in the Mirror or the News Junkie or whatever, but there was a piece that said, I don't know whether you saw it, said something like, well, you know, it doesn't matter what the committee does, but what does matter is whether or not the House and Senate members in an election year are going to want to go near any of this, right? I mean, are they really going to want to? Some of this stuff's going to be radioactive. There are going to be some businesses, you and I both know, they say, oh, all right, we can afford to do this. But others are going to be like, no, we can't. And, you know, do you think there's enough of a spine once this comes out of committee to where the House and Senate, again, in an election year where some of these races are decided by a few hundred votes, do they have the guts to go ahead with general votes on this?
I don't think so. I mean, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx this, but I can't imagine they, you know, what's the number one job of a politician? It's to get reelected. So do you put your name on the line for this? I mean, most of these businesses are already offering or already accommodating, you know, sick time. Like, hey, if yeah. you're sick, don't come in, you know, especially after COVID. People are very, you know, overly sensitive about any, you know, sneeze or sniffle you have.
Mm-hmm.
So they're already, like, doing this. But just to impose more mandates and make them to do more paperwork and follow more rules, it's crazy. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it will. The Labor Committee, you should watch it, your listeners, sometime. It's nuts. It's run by people that used to work for the unions. Not in a union, actually worked for the unions.
Yeah.
And everything they put through is a bill that benefits the unions. And there's never, like, some of the you know, members of the committee, you know, they'll put in bills to be more pro-business, but they don't even call them. I mean, they run the show in that committee. But when it gets mm-hmm. down to the – it'll probably pass the Senate. I believe it did last year, but I can't see, you know, Matt Ritter even, like, calling this thing. It's this wouldn't make sense in an election year. But don't fret. They'll bring it up next year.
And you're as cynical as I am, you know. And finally, I also read Megan, where there may float this. Now, look, I'm all for worker rights. I get this,
but unemployment benefits for people who go on strike. I read where that may come up again, too. You know, I even know some progressives who said, hey, I'm drawing the line at that. You're on strike. You're on strike.
Okay, the king of progressive, Gavin Newsom, governor of California,
yeah.
He even didn't want it to go through. He vetoed that bill out there.
Yeah.
So he didn't even want it. But for some reason, Connecticut wants to be the California of the East. And, hey, let's do what California does. No, this is crazy. Actually, during it was either last year or the year before, someone even testified that was on the picket line during the stop and shop strike saying,
yeah.
Oh, if we had this protection, we would be out longer. And one thing that most people don't know is unions have strike funds.
They have strike funds.
Yeah. So this is not going to be an incentive for people to come back to the table and bargain, you know, but so it's like both sides can get, you know, come to an agreement and get back to work. I mean, what's the incentive? You're getting strike funds and then unemployment. You're going to see on in some cases, you could be making more money just to sit stealing the picket line in the summer.
I'm right now at 525. I'm fascinated that you anointed Gavin Newsom the king of the progressives. I like that. I have that power. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio. Check her out. Check out the columns, the archive, and everything at yankeeinstitute.org. Hey, Megan, thanks. We'll chat next week. Thank you.
Enjoy the snow.
Thanks. Control the dogs. Take care.